Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
And now, back to a man who didn't let being named one of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America go to his head.
Woo! Woo! Yes! In your face!
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging around with me. It's my pleasure as we wrap up Small Business Week, celebrating Small Business Week in America 2007, my 10th Small Business Week celebration, and looking forward to a bunch more. I don't know how many tens more, but a bunch more, hopefully many more. And somebody who cares a lot about small business is our good friend Marty Regalia. Martin Regalia is the Vice President of Economic and Tax Policy and the Chief Economist at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and he's been with us many times before. I've been in his shop before visiting with him. I actually interviewed him in his building before, and he's our good friend. Marty, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Jim.
It's good to have you back, and I'm glad you're here because there seems to be some confusion, Marty, about the economy. You know, on the one hand, you hear people talking about the real estate bubble is there, and which I've been denying. I've been saying there is no such thing as a national real estate bubble, and you got people talking about some people worried about inflation, and of course we got $3 gasoline now in much of the country, but at the same moment, small business owners are doing pretty good out there. We've got record job creation, and the Dow hit a record this week. So what do we make about all this, Marty?
Well, I think that the economy over the last year or so has kind of taken a little bit of a breather, in part because of higher oil prices and in part because the Fed was raising interest rates. But when you look at the fundamental underpinnings of the economy, it's still very, very solid. We saw that job growth has continued. We put, it's at a slower pace than it was. But every once in a while in an economic cycle, you need these kind of periods of catch-up, where the economy rebalances itself and then moves on. So, basically we have a fundamentally solid economy, but there's always something out there that the naysayers can point to. I mean, they pointed to the real estate market. I think, as you point out, there clearly isn't a national housing bubble, but there has been a very significant retrenchment in the housing sector, particularly in the subprime sector. But when you actually look at subprime lending, you got to wonder why loans like that were made in the first place.
Well, so exactly. Let me ask you.
Maybe we were getting ahead of ourselves.
Well, Marty, let me ask you this question. Based on what you just said, could we look at what has happened in housing over the last 4 or 5 years as not unlike the dot-com scenario in the late 90s, meaning there were a lot of companies that never should have been formed in the 90s that had no real basis. They basically just burned a lot of cash. They didn't create a lot. Has part of the excitement and the maybe irrational exuberance about real estate over the last 4 or 5 years been a little bit artificial due to the subprime lending?
Well, I think possibly a little bit. I think there are fundamental differences between the real estate issue and the tech bubble that was clearly,
because there are underlying assets for the real estate.
Exactly, that's exactly right. Because there are real homes underlying it, and in fact, whereas people in the tech bubble that invested in some of these very uncertain companies ended up losing a significant amount of money, most of the people in the housing market, the overwhelming majority, aren't losing any money on their home. In fact, mm-hmm. even at today's prices, if you've owned a home for more than a year and a half, you still have positive equity in your house.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's not of the same order of magnitude. And I think that, we'll see over the course of this year that the market, I think, has already bottomed. I think the bottom will last for quite some time. It'll extend
the real estate market
mm-hmm. will extend into the latter part of this year and the early part of next year. But then the market will start growing again, and people that were worried about their home values and the investments in their home are going to find that they turn out to be very, very solid investments over the long haul. So it's not something that that I am worried about. There are other areas of the economy that actually bother me more.
What are some of those areas?
Well, the area that's most concerning, disconcerting to me right now is what's happening in investment. Now, just the other day, yesterday, the durable goods numbers came out, and they were up. So for March, February showed a pretty good increase as well. So we're starting to see a little bit of a snapback there, and that's very, very heartening. But the weakness over the last couple of quarters in investment was very reminiscent of what we saw in 2003.
And when you say an investment, you're talking about largely capital spending by businesses, right?
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Capital spending by business. And back in 2002 and 2003, businesses were pretty flush with funds, but they weren't investing. They were uncertain, and they were hesitant.
Hold on to that thought, Marty. We've got to take a quick break. Marty Regalia, folks, our good friend and vice president and chief economist with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. He and I will be back. He's got some more information for us, and I've got a little story to tell him I'd like to get his comments on. And you've already heard me talk about this. I want to get his thoughts. It's 20 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with me. We'll be right back. We're back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. And my website is www. Actually, I have two. Smallbusinessadvocate.com, which is the original site, the 10-year-old site, the one that where you can find my show and my newsletter and my blog and all that good stuff that will help you have the maximum opportunity to be successful. If you have a question, if you'd like to know more about how to do something in small business, you've got a question, a challenge, an opportunity you'd like to know more about, it. We've got a brand new knowledge base that we've launched this week that we're excited to tell you about, and it's AskJim.biz. It's the world's first and only knowledge base for small business, AskJim.biz, Small Business Answers Now. So check it out when you get a chance to go there and ask your question and take it through its paces and then let me know what you think about it. Marty Regalia is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. Martin A. Regalia is the vice president and chief economist at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. We're talking about his take on the economy. And Marty, you were just telling us that it looks like maybe corporate investment is picking up a little bit. That I was reading in the journal yesterday that some other people who agree with you on that and that's kind of good news for the economy overall. What about, are you worried about oil prices?
Well, we're always worried about oil prices, but, you know, it's tough when you look at oil prices because we know that they reflect some market phenomena and some non-market phenomena. In other words, they're controlled to a certain extent by the OPEC cartel. And so when you look at oil prices, you can never really tell what the market price should be because it depends upon what OPEC does in terms of their production volumes. Right now, what we're looking at is a situation where the cartel seems to want to hold oil prices in the $60 to $65 range.
Right.
The reason is that if they allow them to go up too much higher than that, if they get up into 70 or above and stay there, then we have a lot of alternative technologies that we could bring online, but we don't because they're not economically viable when oil is $65 or less. And so if you were to make those investments and then they were to increase the production, you would be caught short. So businesses aren't doing that. Individuals aren't doing that. And so what I think is happening is it's kind of like in the old days, you could either milk the cow or you could kill the cow and eat it.
Right, right.
If they push oil prices too high, they're likely to kill the cow.
Yeah.
And what they're trying to do is milk the cow. And they've had many, many years. They've had a few decades
They've gotten pretty good at it. Now, At $65 a barrel, which is about where it is today, is there any in your mind? Gas prices have gone up to about $3 a barrel now. Is that justified at $65 a barrel?
Well, I mean, the $65 a barrel is the market price given OPEC's production schedule. So,
but $3 a gallon for gas. But $3 a gallon for gas, that seems high to me, even at 65.
Well, the gallon of gas price is a little bit different because that has to do with both the oil price and more directly with the refining price and with the price of the additives that have to go in to all the different regional specifications. And so when you look at that, And we've seen some refineries brought offline unexpectedly in the recent past. And I think those refineries being brought offline was what kicked the price up in the gasoline as sharply as it did. Now,
are those temporary offlines, or are they permanent?
No, they're supposedly temporary, and they're supposedly getting them back online. Literally as we speak.
So you think it's been a mechanical situation that we're in right now with the gas prices? I will tell you this, Marty. In my opinion, $3 a gallon gas is not going to be good for consumers.
Well, the $3 a gallon certainly isn't good for consumers. It's really kind of interesting, though, when you compare that relatively high, to our way of thinking, $3 a gallon price, that's extremely low to anyone else in the rest of the world. And I think what we're going to have to do in the future is a number of things. One, we'll have to open up some of the reserves that we have, and I'm not talking about official reserves. I'm talking about we have gas in the Gulf. We have gas and oil in the Gulf. We have gas and oil on the outer continental shelf. We have gas and oil in Alaska.
Right.
And we can go after these natural resources.
We got to do that, Marty. We got to go get that. We can't talk about oil independence without taking every opportunity to get our own oil. Don't you think?
No, that's absolutely right, and I think that's the first step. But I think then we also have other steps. We really do have to start learning how to conserve somewhat better than we do. I think that we've always been a country that doesn't focus much on the conservation side or the efficiency side. And we become more energy efficient as an economy, but we can do even more.
Are you worried, Marty, as I am about the global warming nut jobs and who are getting everybody whipped into a frenzy? I'm not concerned. The thing I'm the most concerned about is that we're going to these people are going to get control of the global warming debate and policy, and they're going to hurt our economy in the process. Reducing humans' impact on global warming is a good thing. I don't have a problem with that. I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I'm worried about what they're going to do to the economy.
No, I agree with you 100%. I mean, we all want to leave an environment to our grandchildren and their children, that is as good or better than what we have, and so we have to show stewardship. But you have to have good data to know what you're doing.
You're
flying blind and bouncing off the walls willy nilly doesn't help. I mean, 30 years ago they were talking about the next ice age. The same people that are talking about global warming today.
Well, I tell people, yes, global warming is true because 10,000 years ago, Kentucky was under 5,000 feet of ice. And that was before. That was long before the internal combustion engine. Stand by. Marty Regalia and I will be right back after these messages. It's 10 Till. Marty is with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. We're back. It's 7 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with Marty Regalia, Vice President of Economic and Tax Policy at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the Chief Economist there at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. He's a good friend of ours, a longtime member of our Brain Trust. Marty, tell us a little bit about the U.S. Chamber.
Well, the U.S. Chamber is the largest business advocacy group in the world. I mean, we represent well over 3 million members of every size, sector, region. We have a federation that includes about 850 to 900 other associations, single industry associations, and then we have about 3,000 state and local chambers that are also a member of the U.S. Chamber. So we
and that's uschamber.com, right?
That's correct.
So, folks, that's the website. Check it out when you get a chance. They got good stuff there. Marty, let me tell you a little quick story, and I want to get your thoughts on this. On Tuesday, Senator John Kerry, the chairman of the Small Business Committee in the Senate, spoke to our group, our gathering there in Washington, D.C., where you are now during Small Business Week. A couple of hundred small business owners there and other people, policymakers. And here were almost the exact words out of his mouth in one example he gave. He was talking about the economy, and he said, you're currently operating, and I'm paraphrasing, this is not the exact quote, but it's real close. He said, you small business owners are currently operating in a less than stellar job creation environment. He actually said those words, Marty. And I didn't. You'll be proud of me. I didn't stand up and throw a roll at him. I didn't take him to task. I didn't ask any questions. I just let him have his day. But you know what, Marty? I'm sorry, but what he said is a lie.
Well, you see, in Washington, we call them interpretations. And
well, tell us what the real job numbers are.
Data than what you or I or most other people have. Because if you look at job numbers, you can see that with the economy having been slowed down in the last year or so, that the amount of net new jobs each month on average has slowed a little bit.
But Marty, wait a minute. They had to adjust upward the January and February numbers
They've adjusted every month upward, I think, for the last 11 consecutive months. And last year, after the fact, after a very, very good job growth year, they found out that, lo and behold, there were about 880,000 jobs that they had missed.
I heard it was a million.
Yeah, well, it rounds up, so it's a lot. And the point being is that the unemployment rate's currently 4.4%. So the question is, you know, kind of the old limbo game: how low can you go?
Well, if you go
much lower than 4.4%, you're going to be pulling in non-productive workers into the workforce, because there's a frictional level of unemployment that you really can't go below without pulling.
So basically, we've got full employment now.
Oh, absolutely.
We've created he was talking to the people who created most of the 7.8 million jobs in the last 4 years. And you know, I wanted to say, Senator, what color is the sky in your world?
Yeah, well, they've been trying to, you know, to sell a weaker economy and a weaker economic outlook. And as I said, if you just look at the numbers, you see that the numbers in the most recent months are down a little tiny bit. They're still very good. They're still positive. There's still about 150,000 jobs or so per month, net new jobs. But it is down a little bit from what it was in the November and December period. So, you know, they look at it and it's just like, you know, the housing data that we were talking about earlier. If you look at housing starts and housing sales, they've been up and down a little bit each month for the last 3 or 4 months. Now, if you compare them to a year ago, just prior to the peak, then they look bad.
Marty, I got about a minute left. Before you go, talk to small business owners about what you think the rest of the year is going to be like. What should we think about?
I think the rest of the year is going to be gradually improving. We just got the number for first quarter GDP. It was 1.3%. I think that's going to be the low for this economic cycle. And I think what we're going to see now is a gradual increase in the second quarter to about 2.5%, and then back up in this latter part of the year, very close to 3%. And that'll be driven by a gradually improving housing market and hopefully continued improvement on the investment side, on business investment in capital and capital equipment. I think we'll even see a modest bit of help from the trade sector as well. So I think we'll see a few more exports and a few less imports.
Marty, I'd like for you to come back another day and talk to us about the impact of Sarbanes-Oxley on the marketplace. Will you do that another day?
I sure will, Jim.
Thank you, Marty Regalia. Thank you, Marty, for being here. Good job today. See you next time.
Thank you.
We got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, saying one last time this week, happy Small Business Week.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.